The following podcast may contain adult language and an abundance of salt. So get ready, nerds, because we're talking to David Hewlett from Stargate and Apple TV's C. Welcome, everybody, and thank you so much for joining us on this special episode of the Salty Nerd Podcast. I am joined by my fantastic panel of nerds. Matt Vader is very excited to be here today.
Freaking out,
man. You're kind of freaking out a little bit. Welcome, sir.
Thanks.
And Jude, who is sipping on her coffee, as always.
Always.
Hello, how are
Hello.
You? And the frustrated producer of the show, Matthew Kadish.
So I've been a Stargate fan since I was a kid, and I love Stargate Atlantis was my favorite of the Stargate shows. And I am so excited because Dr. Rodney McKay was my favorite character of the franchise, and getting to talk to David Hewlett today, it's like a dream come true.
Yeah. So. And Speaking of the man, the myth, the legend, the greatest scientist this side of the galaxy, David Hewlett, welcome to the show, sir. How are you doing?
I was my favorite character too, so I'm with you entirely, completely. Yeah, yeah.
We are honored to have you on our silly little podcast that we do every week. It's a big. This past year has been huge for us.
Yeah, it's weird.
We've gotten some big name people on the show. We're kind of like a little imposter syndrome going on, but thank you so much for joining us, man. I really appreciate
it. But I think people are getting wise to this stuff too, right? It's like, you know, I mean, the number of times the salty nerds came up whenever I would say something or do something, they go, ah, salty nerds, they're going to love that or they're going to hate that. Like, you know, I was like, Chopper, am I missing something? What's the salty nerd crap?
But, you know. Oh my God. That's so weird to me. It's so weird to us. Like We're in the mouths of people on set with the show that we're watching. That's
like isn't that wild though? Like that's so the wild. Fact that you can do that is so exciting to me. Like it just, you know, the idea that you can do from your basement, you can basically have your own television station. It's just I can't get my head around it. I absolutely love it.
Technology is wonderful these days.
I really wish that Kadish was wearing his basement dweller shirt now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, somebody used that as an insult against us at one point.
Was it Mangold?
Yeah, it was Mangold. It called us basement dwellers. And we're like, yeah, that's all right.
We're gonna own that. The basement's the best place to be. It's nice and cool in the summer. You know, warm in the winter.
Yeah, it's unfortunately, very Las Vegas doesn't allow for basements. So.
Yeah, we can't take down.
Oh, right. We have, Toronto has basements, and I think they're just there to flood. I think that's basically the only reason. So everything's slightly damp and there's a lot of little creepy crawlies and this is my home.
Yeah.
Right on.
Before we dive super deep into this episode, let's take a quick break and listen to some sponsors.
If you're into designer furniture and you want the sofa that broke the internet, you don't have to go broke to get it. Because Designer Looks Furniture has all the same styles and trends and all the quality, but without the designer prices. Check them out. Designer Looks at Value City Furniture or designerlooks.com.
Oh, we could fly.
This is your summer. That means Six Flags and the taste of an ice-cold Coca-Cola. We're talking thrilling coasters, delicious burgers, yes. Real moments together, and this. Coke is summer refreshment when you need it most, so you can hop on another ride or race down a slide at the water park. Six Flags and Coca-Cola. Come make it yours. Visit sixflags.com/coke to save up to $20 on passes, plus daily tickets starting at $34.99.
You see where your business can go. To get there, you may need
another 10 trucks.
At Century Insurance, we put more than 115 years of industry experience to work to help protect you as you
launch a new delivery service
or
expand into a new region
and reach your business goals. Century, right by you. Property and casualty coverages are underwritten and safety services are provided by a member of the Century Insurance Group, Stevens Point, Wisconsin. For a complete listing of companies, visit century.com. Policies, coverages, benefits, and discounts are not available in all states. See policy for complete coverage details.
So, David, my first question for you, I want to know the backstory. How did you get involved in Apple TV's C from season 2? Is it something with, because I know Jason Momoa is a fellow Stargater, so is there something going on there? What happened?
I was so surprised because I knew that Jason was doing the show. The last time I'd seen Jason, we'd had a huge fight, because I don't know if you know this about me at all. The one of the many things about me that's very similar to McKay is when I lose my temper, I lose my temper. And so Jason was angry about something. I was angry about something. We were literally screaming at each other at like a convention and hadn't spoken for ages. And I was like, you know, and I would every so often I'd send a little email saying like, you know, you're still mad or whatever, you know, that kind of stuff. And then, of course, he becomes this like megastar. And I'm like, damn it. Now freaking Aquaman's mad at me. Like, add that to the list. You know, and so the show came up, a part came up, and this traumatic part came up, and I was like, nah, no way, nope, not gonna work. I don't want to show up on Jason's set, and it's just gonna be awkward and forget it. And then my wife's like, well, it's kind of a fun part, and maybe Jason's got other things to do than just worry about you. And I was like, no, people worry about me all the time. So I'm sure the whole of Aquaman was ruined for him because we weren't speaking at the time. I sort of got talking to doing the audition, worry about it later. And then I said, like, to the casting, I said, like, look, if Jason doesn't know about this, then I'm not doing it because I don't want to show up on set and have a whole, like, like, there needs to be some kind of... And then Tropper, the fabulous Tropper, says, well, no, he said, we're looking for like an evil Fraser Crane. And he said, Hewlett. And he goes, and apparently he'd said, we don't get along, but he's a good actor. And so I show up on set and I was a little nervous, and I sort of went up to him and said, like, I said, Jason, look, dude, thanks for doing this. I know you don't have to. And I appreciate it. It's a fun part. And then, like, 5 minutes later, we're like back to just insulting each other like we were before. And it was just like being back on Stargate again. It was fantastic. Like he says, it's exactly the same, but the toys are more expensive. So, you know, it's just, and he's a lovely guy. Like he was always a lovely guy. He was always incredibly supportive. He was like one of the only cast to sort of show up at a screening of this little movie that we'd made. And he was just like, oh, dude, like, you're making your stuff. And I love that. And like, he's just an artist. Like, he's just, I mean, it's funny because he's, you know, he's like a movie star, but he's also at heart, I think he's like a found item artist. Like, he'd probably just rather just be pulling driftwood out of the sea and building things and fixing cars.
He
kind of
does
stuff.
That with his clothing line. He has like
he does that anyway. Yes. It's true.
Isn't
it's true.
All recycled plastic?
It's either that or he does something with like aged leather, like repurposed leather. I don't know. Yeah,
he probably does both of those things.
Yeah.
He was like he's like a clothes horse too. Like, he's just like, he's always been incredibly, like, we are literally oil and water. Like, we are as opposite as you get. I have absolutely no fashion sense. I am the least laid back person there is. I am the most uptight and controlling person there is. He's just like and for some reason, we always sort of got along in this kind of sort of, well, except when we didn't, sort of amusingly kind of odd, mm-hmm. odd, huh. Odd couple like, ways. So.
Man, we don't know any people like that.
Man, I gotta, no, not at all.
Yeah.
No, I gotta give you some props though. You don't I would be hard pressed to start going after a guy that size.
Well, that was, like, to be fair, that's where the mist descends, right? You get that kind of like, you're like angry, and then suddenly you go like, wow, he's really tall. And you're like, and he's got friends.
Yeah. Like, and I'm like, fucking, yeah. That's fucking Jason Momoa. He's yeah. Freaking huge.
Yeah. I've got like a 24-year-old handler, you know, with a little clipboard. That's all I got on my back.
There's a meme of Jason where it's got his two bodyguards and they're like half his size. And it's like, yeah. Jason Momoa is the boss level of the video game you're trying to beat, and his henchmen are his guards.
Yeah, that's basically it. Yeah. He's what, and he was, even before he was famous, you know, but really famous. I mean, he'd walk into a restaurant. Everyone would just, you know, he's just such a striking figure and such a huge personality anyways. It was like, I always likened him to like he's like a Great Dane puppy. Like just rah, 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 you know, like just comes in and actually that's more me. That's more Muppet, I suppose. But yeah, he's just huge and everywhere and loud and lovely. And he's just like a giant. He's like a giant heart, really, that guy.
I'm genuinely happy to hear you guys call Men in Defense, though. That's awesome.
Oh, God. That's great. I think this goes down, like, C goes down is literally, I think at this point, like, my favorite thing to work on because, partially because it mended fences and working with Tropper. Frankly, Tropper is like, he's the only showrunner I've ever worked with who I prefer it when he's on set. Like,
oh, wow.
You know what I mean? Like, normally it's like, oh, God, what now? You know? But with him, he's just, I don't know. The guy's just, I saw your interview. You get a sense of him. He's like, he's both humble, but egotistical and, you know.
He's just very real. And C is one of our favorite shows too. And a lot of the reason why it is because of like how welcoming all of the cast and crew has been to us. And it's just like, oh, there's just nice and real. And it's just really cool to just be able to talk to people who
aren't dicks.
Well, they are a family. They call themselves a family, and they are. I mean,
Yeah, Tropper's whole thing, like he reached out to us and he's kind of taken us under his wing and he's helped us set up these interviews with like you and some other yeah. people. And he's just so generous. Like we love him and he hasn't made a bad TV show. So.
Right.
You know? Even Archie. Send us
oh yeah, Archie, yeah.
And we go hard on that guy.
Oh my God, poor Kofun. I was like, did you get him on? Did he talk?
No.
I've messaged him on Instagram and I was like, hey man, I hope you know that like this is just for the show. Like it's right. the character, not you. We love
he's
you.
He's like, fuck you. Thank you very much. Fuck you very much.
He's like, no, totally. I'm like, he's like, my goal is to get people like you to talk about us on our podcast. So more power to you. I'm like, yeah. it's so cool that this cast and crew has been awesome with us. Like, cause we roast the show sometimes and we make fun of it and everybody's been,
who like, doesn't though? Like, isn't
great
that
great sense yeah. of humor?
I mean, that's the, right. like, that's my, one of my, I think one of the things I will take to the grave with me is sitting down with my son and just ripping to shreds the movie that we're watching. You know what I mean? Like, it's just yeah. so much CG, cartoon, lame, yeah. bad acting. Like we're just, we are vicious, like vicious.
You would fit in well.
Yeah, over here. You should see our invasion reviews.
Oh my God.
Oh my God. Yeah. I'm not watching that. It's like, you can, it's like literally like, when is this over? I'm like, what? That is a review.
There's aliens in this movie? What's going on?
Our motto is we watch them so you don't have to.
Yeah.
Right.
Our nice. It's been said on the comments that our reviews are better than the actual show. So we have a lot of fun talking about that show.
But that's the funny yeah. thing, isn't it? I mean, like it's, you know, because I think it speaks to a lot, especially sort of as a nerd myself. Like, I really did find myself, like, I was watching that Val thing, and it's like, who do you talk to about? Like, my wife hasn't seen it. She probably won't. You know, my son doesn't know who he is. I was like, I grew up with him, and now he's, you know, now he's weirder. Like, it's just, you know.
Yeah, you're talking about the Val documentary.
Yeah. Which I know you guys, I felt that you were all like, I don't want to do this. I don't want to talk about this.
Yeah.
Really? Is that what it was? Yeah.
Yeah. That's well, a, yeah. Because
Kadish kind of made us.
Yeah. He was like, I'm going to pull my producer card and we're going to talk about this Val documentary. And I'm like,
but it was, I think because of that, it was interesting though. Like, I really think it was yeah. like, I found it fascinating anyway. So, you know.
Well, we appreciate that.
It made Vader want to kill himself.
I had weird dreams. Like, I had literally weird nightmares after that movie. I watched it over two nights, basically.
Yeah, I did too.
And oh man, like creepy, weird,
The scene in that documentary when he's at the convention signing the stuff and then he gets sick and they stop. I had to turn it off.
The convention stuff is so weird.
And I'm like, oh my God. Because, you know, I think that was right about the time.
It was right after we went to the Star Trek convention.
We spent the entire week at the Star Trek con.
And who was there? Who was the, what were the names at the convention?
They had some of the Discovery people and then the Enterprise crew was there for the most part. Yeah. And then there was like one or two people from Voyager.
But I kind of chalked it up more to like in the vendor hall where we had our booth set up. There's like all these actors from like old shows from the 70s and stuff.
Or like one episode.
Well, you know, sitting there doing their $5 things, you know, and I was just like, some of them were just being ignored. And you know that they're just.
It hurts. It just hurts. Like I was really torn with that because with Stargate, when Stargate happened, you know, you start getting invited to these things. And I was like, nah, I don't know. Like, it just feels like a slippery slope. And I had. We had a couple of like friends of my father-in-law's who used to take him over and they would make curries and watch Stargate together every night. Like watch Atlantis with it. Cause he didn't have whatever it was, Sky TV in England or whatever. And they told me off. They're like, no, no one's forcing us to come in and meet you. No one's forcing us to spend money to see you. You're like the entertainment at a wedding. And I was like, say what? And it was like, they're like, no, seriously, you're like the band at a wedding. We all get together to see our friends. We line up and talk about our interactions with the various different people. Like, it doesn't, in a way, you're interchangeable. Like, it doesn't matter what names are. And then I was like, oh, okay, then I will take your money.
I like it.
So my next question about C is, it was kind of a moment where we all kind of chuckled that you were another mad scientist on C. Did you specifically go out to get this part because you knew it was a scientist, or was it just luck of the draw? How did that happen?
I mean, I think obviously Jason, but I love it. Like, I just like, those are the characters. I got into acting because of Doctor Who. Like, I watched Doctor Who as a kid and I was like, I wanted to be Doctor Who. Like, it took me a lot, probably longer than it should have, to realize that Doctor Who wasn't real and that you could only pretend to be Doctor Who. And at that point, I was like, oh my God, that's way easier. So, you know, I these are the parts I dream of. Like, this is the fun stuff. Like, I love all the techno babble and I love trying to figure out what the hell I'm talking about and how to say it fast enough that people will be, you know, people who don't care don't have to worry about it, and people who do care will get something out of it. I mean, it's like those people who do like extreme sports. I like the idea of like extreme acting or extreme speech speechifying. So just like something like Tormata is like, I mean, again, you don't really see it in season two. And Tropper's terrible poker face tells you that he doesn't want to tell you anything about season three. But there's definitely some more speeches in season three, which is, I think, the reason why, you know, a more terrifying person wasn't brought in.
Okay.
I was going to ask, I hope we get more of your character in season three.
So, oh, you will. You'll be bored sick of me by it. Yeah. Yeah.
Good. Good, because every episode would come on and we're like, where's Hewlett? Yeah. He's not in this episode either.
I just started telling people I was in the background of all those scenes. Like, just because they're such brief moments in season two that it was getting embarrassing. I was like, oh yeah, no, you didn't see the fights. Oh, that war scene. Yeah, that was me. I was in there. Yeah.
All right. So Jonathan Tropper said that he needed someone who was good at giving really long speeches to play Tormata. And that's how your name came up with Jason. So I just want to know, like, how have you developed this talent of just doing these big, long monologues?
I just like, I guess people sort of assume that because I've done a lot of talking on camera that I'm really good at learning lines. I suck at learning lines. It takes me forever. But I just go over and over. I am completely obsessive about it. Like, I try, even if there are lines I don't particularly like, I'll try to make them work. I feel like I came to film through film, if that makes sense, not as an actor. So my earliest experiences with film were making little 8mm films with my friends when we were 13, 14 years old. With actually Vincenzo Natali, who went on to do Cube and Splice and In the Tall Grass, and now this Peripheral series, which I'm sure you'll rip to shreds. You know, there's like, he's still like, we still work together. I'm about to work with him in January as well. But, so I got into it from this idea that you were a part of the crew. And as such, you need to show up and know your lines and know what you're doing. And it's about trying to keep everything going. And that's worked against me at times, but I think in the long run, it's worked for me, because people, generally, you know, unless I'm having a particularly bad day, that I'm going to at least know my lines when I show up, you know, which weirdly is not always the case for some reason, which I've never quite understood. I was like, really? They don't know their lines? Like, I was merciless on day players who came into Stargate who didn't know their lines. I was like, oh yeah, they are really tough to speak. Yeah, I've got 12 pages of them today. So I think you may want to get yours down before you get to my scene, because I will rip you to shreds.
Like, no mercy.
I was merciless. You know?
I mean, when I was directing, I was like, you actors have one job.
That's literally it. Well, two jobs. It's what? It's like, know your lines and don't bump into the furniture. On C, you're allowed to bump into the furniture. Like, there's nothing, you have no excuse. You know?
You mentioned Cube, and I think that was the first time that I remember seeing you on screen.
It's probably the biggest thing I'd done.
Yeah, and you know, I love how that movie, it goes from like this science fiction horror movie into like this weird allegory for how institutional systems just chew up and spit out people.
And, that's Vincenzo.
Yeah, I've always found that movie really fascinating. Do you have any like interesting behind the scenes stories about the making of that movie?
Well, that was my friend's first film, and he was very smart about it. He made a short film about a bunch of people stuck in an elevator. And then, of course, that's the perfect trailer for saying like, hey, look how good that was. Now, why don't we do an entire movie about that? Mm-hmm. So it was made for very little money. I think it was like $750,000. Yeah. Sorry.
It's $750,000.
Well done.
The exchange rate was very good. It was, yeah, $750,000. I think it was $750,000 to make the film. And that's Canadian. So that probably is $750 American. Just won a little bit of a cube and just an incredibly well thought out film. It was Vincenzo and Andre, again, two friends who I'd like, we'd literally been making films for, by then we'd be making films for almost 10 years together. So it was like, you know, there's a shorthand that you get with people after a while where it's like, Dave, can you just go in? And you're like, yeah, okay. Yeah, you just like, I got this much film left in the camera. Look up, look right, look left. You know, like it's literally, you understand that you are putting together a puzzle, if that makes sense. Yeah, you know,
Cube is one of those weird movies where, number one, it's timeless. Like you can watch it nowadays and it plays the same as it did when it first came out. But it's also so like original and interesting. It's one of those.
It has a visceral feeling to it.
It really does. Yeah. Yeah. It's so smartly made and written. The sequels, not so much, but you weren't in any of those. So.
Oh my God. Doesn't matter. Well, there was never meant to be sequels, right? I mean, it was designed specifically not to. It was sort of in a weird way, it was like an action art film. I mean, it was like, and it was at the time, it was something fairly sort of original. I've seen so many things, you know, a number of the Resident Evil movies and stuff, you'll see bits that like are just straight out of Cube. And if you watch, if you listen to the commentary on them, they'll actually reference it. Did I mean Resident Evil? Did I got the right one?
Is that the one with the lasers, right?
Yeah, with the lasers that cut the guy in the cubes. And then, like it's
Resident Evil.
So if you listen to the commentary, he actually says, yeah, I ripped this off some movie, like Cube movie or something. It was like, I was like, that was our movie.
That's my movie. So shifting gears back to C, we talked to Tropper about your character and how like we kind of speculated, and this is purely just fan speculation, that like you were the scientist who was going to cure the virus that was causing everybody to be blind. I was on that train. I was ready to roll. And he was like, well, we weren't going to do that, but we did have this other thing in mind.
Oh my God. Could you imagine like wolf eyes?
Replacing eyes and stuff. And your character has a ton of scars on his face.
But I could have had wolf eyes.
Is that something that might still happen later on? Was that part of the backstory of your character?
It's funny. I think that was before I was a part of it. So I'm not sure. That was the first time I'd heard it, when I heard you talking to Tropper about it. And I was like, oh my God, that's so cool. Like, we'd always talked about the idea that these scars, and the scars sort of, I mean, you'll see the story of the scars has sort of changed since between season 2 and 3 in a way, which was an interesting, I was like, they're what? But because originally he talked about like experimenting on myself, and the original makeup was very straight lines, very precise, almost like a grid of himself working on his own eyes. Just to, again, kind of, if you want to get a sense of just how crazy someone is, you know, the operating on your own eyes, generally a bad idea.
Experimentation.
Yeah. Yeah. Hard to get a date. Yeah. But so that was definitely an aspect of it. But no, it was always, by the time I was there, it was all about this. It was all about the explosives, which I got to say are kind of fun. I know.
Oh, yeah. It's always fun to blow stuff up.
I know. It's like make speeches, blow stuff up. I mean, that's like, this is a job.
Yeah. And your reaction in the finale when that explosion happened, I was like, he's not acting. That really is.
It was loud. I don't just play a coward on television. I am like, that sucker went off. I mean, it was, but again, I felt like, because there was debate about that too. Like, do you react to that? Do you not react to that? Like, what's the, you know, like a truly evil person would be like, yeah, nothing shakes him. But I was like, no, like he needs to, he's just a scientist. Like he's like, oh shit. And then it's like, oh my God. Like, you know what I mean? If it doesn't scare him, I don't know how he's supposed to then, you know, use that against his enemies. So
yeah. And also people in that society, like they rely on their hearing so much that when, like, they never hear anything that loud.
Yeah.
So like, I was like, oh, that was a good call to actually have him react to it.
Yes, it was a brilliant call, wasn't it?
Entirely, well done, sir.
Entirely planned in advance. Normally, yes. I would be so brave.
The direction was
It's almost like you're a professional or something.
Every so often I'll watch like an old Atlantis episode with the kid or something, and it's always funny to watch like us in the puddle jumper, and then, you know, we're getting shot at or whatever, and I'm like, oh God! And then you look at everyone else in the puddle jumper, just like. And I'm like, what the hell is McKay doing? But it's always like this level. I have like a Muppet level of commitment to these things, it seems. And I'll stand by them.
I never really thought about comparing you to Kermit, but
I think it's more Beaker, but I think as Beaker, I've got older, yeah, okay. I've gone from Beaker to Kermit and a little bit of Fozzie Bear in there, I think, maybe. You know.
Yeah, I can see it.
Yeah. Couple of drinks and the Fozzie Bear comes out. Sorry.
Okay, before we continue the conversation, let's hear a word from some sponsors.
Oh, we could fly.
This is your summer. That means Six Flags and the taste of an ice-cold Coca-Cola.
We're talking thrilling coasters, delicious burgers, yes, real moments together, and this. Coke is summer refreshment when you need it most, so you can hop on another ride or race down a slide at the water park. Six Flags and Coca-Cola, come make it yours. Visit sixflags.com/coke to save up to $20 on passes, plus daily tickets starting at $34.99.
Money is the number one cause of stress and the number two cause of divorce. Make your money go further and work harder with a certified financial planner from Facet Wealth. Financial planning used to focus on retirement, but Facet helps you with today. You get a dedicated financial planner that guides you through every financial decision. Inflation, interest rates, stock market changes, home prices. How do you figure it all out? Well, every advisor at Facet is a certified financial planner and fiduciary. That's just a fancy way to say they have the best training and they're legally bound to do what's in your best interest. This isn't just about investments. It's about taking care of your money so you can start living a better life today. Facet has a simple flat fee, no hidden charges, and with nothing to sell, there are no commissions. Visit TryFacetWealth.com for 2 months free off your first year of financial planning. That's TryFacetWealth.com. Facet Wealth is an SEC-registered investment advisor. This is not an offer to buy or sell securities, nor is it investment, legal, or tax advice.
Oh, we could fly.
This is your summer. That means Six Flags and the taste of an ice-cold Coca-Cola. We're talking thrilling coasters, delicious burgers, yes, real moments together, and this. Coke is summer refreshment when you need it most, so you can hop on another ride or race down a slide at the water park. Six Flags and Coca-Cola, come make it yours. Visit sixflags.com/coke to save up to $20 on passes, plus daily tickets starting at $34.99.
I was wondering how challenging it was being a Canadian scientist under American military control.
Ha.
Distant galaxy.
I mean, that was one of the fun things about Stargate, wasn't it, though? Was the idea of this sort of schism between the science and the military stuff, which I think is something that definitely Canadians struggle with as well with their neighbors to the south. You know, but again, because I'm American, British and Canadian. So I have three passports. I'm like, wow, the Bourne identity. Off. Yeah. Yeah.
It's oh my God.
At the border, that's, they literally, holy shit. Yeah. You get to the border, they're like, just make up your fucking mind. I literally had an American guard say, just like choose a country. I was like, I don't have to.
I'm fucking David Hewlett.
Actually, funny story. When I became an American, I did the test. You know, you go in and you do the quiz, and I got called in, and everyone was being called in by their last name. And then when they came out to get me, they said, David. And I was like, yeah, I guess me. And so I go in and we do the test, and the guy's very, you know, very sort of formal and stuff. And he goes, and now a McKay bonus round. And I was like, what? And he literally added extra questions at the end.
Oh, man.
I got them all wrong. Like, all of them wrong. I was like, I thought you liked the show. But yeah, and it turned out, I was quizzed by a Stargate fan, which is kind of
That's
nice.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Speaking of a Stargate fan, the rest of these questions are from my wonderful wife, who is a huge fan of yours. And like we said before I started recording, when she found out that you were going to be on my podcast, she took me a little bit more seriously with this part-time job that I have. Yeah, she's like, oh, you have, who else are you getting on? Oh, yeah, a ton of other people.
My wife didn't give me any questions.
So my wife wanted to know, how often do you chat with your old Stargate co-hosts? You guys keep in touch?
Yeah, not as much as I'd like. I mean, it's for a long time, it was just conventions. I mean, you just see them, you'd see them at conventions every so often. And then I sort of slowed down on the convention stuff. And just because, again, I just found that while I was enjoying it, it was a lot of fun. But as soon as it starts to feel like a chore, I feel like, oh boy, that's when the hairs of the back of your neck go up and you're like, oh man, am I going to be that grumpy old guy? You know, sign, move, sign, you know,
yeah.
No personalizations. So I hadn't been to a number for a while. So it's been quite a while. I got to see, oh, I might have been able to see. God, what am I allowed to say? God damn it. It's like, I feel like there's like a little chopper on my shoulder.
Stargate connection confirmed.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So, well, if it's Joe, he's in season two.
Yeah.
Did you get a chance to see him?
I did. And okay, that's what I was going to say. There was a kind of a fun day where we got to sort of hang out and banter again. And it's just awesome. I know with any show, I think you build up a certain amount of rapport between people. And then there's always little sort of things, you know, there's always, like in any family, there's little arguments or whatever. But it was, I just loved, and what they put up with. Jason, one of my favorite Jason quotes was, he's like, you think it's hard to learn all those lines? Try listening to them. You know, because like the poor guy had to stand there listening to these monologues like over and over and over again. And it's, you know, and then I was like back on set and he's like, I'll be in the trailer. You know,
it's kind of funny because we joked with Tropper about, you know, turning C into Stargate. And we were like, when's Rachel Lutterell going to be?
Appearance? You know? Or as he puts it, some girl.
Yeah,
something like, it's like, yeah,
like, there's like Rachel.
Yeah, I know. I saw the little thing. I was like, Rachel's kid is getting super famous now. Like she's on all these sets doing these like huge movies and stuff. I don't know what they are, but there's someone was saying that she's like on all these massive sets, but with her kids now. So, and she's just, oh my God, she was lovely. She's one of my favorite. She's actually a brilliant writer. She would write these little things and go like, do you want to read these? And I was like, yeah, yeah. And it was just like about growing up in Africa or just like these wonderful little stories that she would do. Really talented bunch.
Did you have any interaction with Robert Picardo?
Picardo. God. Yeah. It's so funny. Picardo and also Mitch Pileggi, the two of like, we were awful because we were kind of like the old men and we just cracked each other up the whole time. Right. Picardo is just, you know, I met Picardo. We were in line. We're in line for food and at lunch. And of course, I was well ahead of him because I always was. when it came to food, I'm always first in line. I was like mouthing off about conventions. It's these freaking actors come in, they start singing, and I just don't want to be that kind of person. And Picardo said, I do opera. And I was like, you do opera? Like, you do operas? He goes, no, I do opera at the convention. So I was like, oh my God, I would hate you. He's just an amazing guy. You could sit there and just talk to him about, he'll tell you about, my God, The Howling. He was in The Howling. He was in, Interspace. He was, not Sorcerer, Legend. He's in Legend. He's the witch in Legend.
Wow. Get out.
He's a freaking witch. Yes. And I don't even know why they cast him as the witch, but there you go. He's got all these amazing stories. Like, so one of my favorite all-time horror movies I haven't seen for years. I'd be curious to know what it's like, but it's The Howling, the original Howling. Mm-hmm. And there's this horrific scene where this like she's going through the filing cabinet and then this wolf paw comes in and takes the file from her. And looks and sort of does this creepy kind of human. Oh my God! And it was freaking the Picardo.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't know if it was actually him in the wolf suit, but he's the guy who just turned into this thing. So yeah, yeah. I was. Yeah,
speaking of your co-stars, so I used to live in West Hollywood, and I'd go down to Barney's Beanery on Santa Monica Boulevard.
Yeah, of course, yeah, yeah.
And I used to hang out a lot with Colin Cunningham and David Nickel.
Oh, wow.
And the first time I met David Nickel, I went up to him. I was like, because he'd go to Barney's Beanery every week or so. And I'd be like, hey, you're that guy from Stargate. And he's like, yes, I am. I'm like, wait, where's your accent?
Yeah. You're doing it wrong.
Yeah. Because, you know, I'm used to hearing him as Zelenka. And
when was he down there? Well, I'm trying to think when he was. This after the show or what?
Yeah. Yeah. This was after the show.
Right.
Him and Colin Cunningham would just come down to Barney's Beanery and hang out there.
That's too funny.
Like every once in a while.
We were in Santa Monica, so I would see. Yeah, yeah. And they're great. And they're just, I mean, again, they're all kind of real, if that makes sense. You know what I mean? Like there's, Joe and Jason were definitely in their own, like they had their own, like they lived a different world in a way. Not in a bad way. I mean, just in a, they just knew how to live life in a different way than we did. I, you know, they were amazing. They would go out. They would do. I would just go home. I was so dog tired every night. Go home, learn lines. my wife would come up with like a giant, we used to call it the bird bath, the martini. It was like this big. I'd be just like, all right, get on the lines, you know, start letting the lines. So, you know.
Yeah. What was funny was, you know, so because I was used to seeing David Nicholas and Zelenka, and like, right. like totally not Russian.
Fumbles look stupid.
When you're talking to him, do people ever confuse you with your character, and when they meet you in real life and they're just like, why aren't you more like Rodney McKay? Or
oh, I wish they said it more. just like him. I was like, oh, great. Great. There was a mom at Baz, my kid's school, who would just call me Dr. McKay. And my son was always like, I was like, I don't understand why she can't remember your name. And I was like, no, that is kind of my name. I've never really minded it. Like, I sort of within reason. I mean, after a while, it's like, okay, can we just, let's just go with David, because it's just getting a bit, it's getting a bit weird. You know,
the whole Shatner thing.
It's yeah.
Like, why don't you just like, you know,
get out of your parents' basement. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Get a life.
It's, I mean, I don't have a life. I feel like if I wasn't doing this, I'd be doing that. You know what I mean? Like I was like that with Doctor Who. I was just completely, you know, in Star Wars and all. I mean, I was just a big, huge, huge fan of all that stuff. So I sort of get it. Like, I feel like this is part of the, it's kind of what you get paid for. I mean, I feel like that's, I've never quite understood I don't understand why anyone would go into acting if they want privacy. Like I know a certain amount of privacy I understand, but you know, and maybe don't, you know, don't start calling me Dr. McKay while you're standing next to me in a urinal. But it's you know, I feel like that's just part of it. And I mean, why wouldn't, like, you could fight it and be miserable all the time, or you can just like enjoy it and it's just a lot more fun. Life is a lot more fun when you're like, cool.
Hey, you were Dr. McKay. And you're like, yes, I was. Yes, I was.
Now I have a new bucket list goal, which is to call him Dr. McKay while at a
uni. Oh, yeah. I peed next to Dr. McKay.
That's it. I'm sure it's been said. It's been said. Yeah.
Nice said PM there, Dr. McKay. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. He went
there. So I was going to ask you what props you have kept from the sets that you've worked on. But now that I know what a Doctor Who fan you are, I'm wondering if you have any props from like other nerddoms.
I mean, with Stargate, there was the thing that depresses me the most about this industry is that they just shred everything. Like the things just, they just get destroyed. As soon as something's finished, it's like, they don't want you. It's like the old Kubrick thing. Like he created special NASA lenses Barry Lyndon. And then he took a hammer to them at the end of the production because he didn't want anyone else to be able to do what he did in that film, which was shoot by very low light.
And
so
that's why he's a genius
and a dick. like, you know,
all the best directors are pretty much dicks.
I think you kind of have to be that sort of singular vision thing. So a lot of this stuff gets destroyed when they were tearing down Stargate Universe. I made a bit for they were paying someone to pull apart the sets. They're going to pay them like $500,000 to pull apart and get rid of all the sets. So I wanted a bid on, I was like, I'll do it for like 250. And my idea was we'd get the sets and like just do a movie on the sets in the weekend. And then you could just sort of store the sets or whatever. And of course they didn't go for it. But we did manage to save one of the shuttle sets. But holy crap, I know why they don't save them. We're spending a fortune in storage on that thing. With the idea of using it in the movie. And eventually we just use little bits of it in the movie. And then even then, after the movie, it all gets shredded again. Like, you know, we came back after the weekend. I was like, all right, where's all the parts? And they're like, they're gone. They were in the dumpster. And you're like, what? It's like, are you kidding me? I could have decorated my entire basement with that stuff. But I have a few things. I'm sure what you can see here is there. So there's a wall sconce up there, which you sort of can see. Okay. That's an SGU wall sconce.
Oh, nice.
It's a little light unit there. None of this is allowed upstairs because my wife is like, yeah, that's ugly. and then my chair, I've been working on the chair because it's actually like a control piece from.
Oh, wow.
But what I want to do is wire it up, but I have to convert it to batteries, and I need to, and a lot of it is hydraulic. So I have to convert that to electrical as well. So, I've been playing with that.
Just oh my God, Dr. Rodney McKay. Come on.
Wouldn't that be fun though? Like you just like, you know, I'm doing a podcast. I got little lights, or maybe I could use that as like my choosing which camera to go with or something.
Anyway. Yeah, your little stream deck over there.
Yeah. Exactly. It's the Atlantis stream deck. And then the biggest surprise. Let me see if I can grab it for you. One sec. All right.
Is this so cool?
Get it without knocking everything over. There we go. All right. This is the weirdest story. This is the weirdest story. Okay.
Go for it.
All right. So this is SG-1.
Oh wow.
This is a table centerpiece from the LA screening of SG-1 when it first started.
Oh,
okay. Wow. And the only reason I have it is that my wife used to work for E! Entertainment, the entertainment network. And she used to do all of these things. And she's a total kleptomaniac and steals the centerpieces.
God bless her.
She steals the centerpieces of like everything she went to. And this happened to be one of them. And we were just digging through some old stuff while we were getting ready to move. And I was like, what's this? Because I thought, oh my God, I've married like a Stargate nerd or something. And then she explained that she was at this thing. And I was like, oh my God, this is like to me, this is the most precious thing because there's literally, I don't think another one of these exists. Wow. And it's literally just air duct with like duct tape on it. Like some intern has gone like way out on this and done, I thought, a really great job of it. Yeah. So that's there you go. Great. So that's awesome. My favorite piece of that. And I didn't even get it. So
what about from C? Do you have anything from the set?
I do. I wonder if I'm allowed to show you. I think I don't see why I wouldn't do it.
It hasn't been long enough yet. Yeah,
I don't want to get the VFX people in trouble, but watch.
You're going to get them in trouble.
Yeah. So, again, little preamble. They can't keep these things for too long, I think, because they start to disintegrate. But so this is what they did.
Is that your face?
Oh, it's a prosthetic.
Isn't that creepy?
Oh, that's so cool.
I love that.
Yeah, my wife's like, yeah, you can keep that downstairs. Creepy, but isn't that wild?
Did you frame it, or was it framed like
no,
that?
No, they framed it for me.
They framed it for you? Oh my gosh, that's amazing.
I love you.
I was so nervous about the prosthetics because, you know, next thing you know, I'm going to have like Spock ears and I'm going to be like, I was terrified I was going to turn into, I just can't do like a Doug Jones. Like the guy, like Doug is just so good at that stuff, like in Shape of Water and the whole Star Trek stuff. I was just terrified that I'm just not that expressive. I mean, I'm expressive, but I think it would just get very tiring. So I was a little nervous coming in, and then they had to change it like a whole bunch of different times. And they were just so, I don't know, they were just so excited about it. They're and I used to read Fangoria magazine. So we're talking about Fangoria and talking about
read that too.
I loved that magazine.
It was great. That was when I was going through my Evil Dead 2 phase. Ooh, and I was like into all this low budget horror. And Fangoria, it was like, you know, like so.
Are we having incredible. Like a stepbrothers moment between Matthew Kadish and David Hume?
I literally just thought in my head, I think Kadish just found his best friend.
Did we just become best friends?
Yep.
We're planning our wedding. Do you want to be best man?
I'll be there. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. With my Fangoria magazines.
You're going to get an invitation now, you know. Yeah, right?
Yeah. Where are you guys based?
Vegas.
Oh, Vegas. Well, that's like Disneyland for grownups.
There you go.
Fangoria magazine was like, I was huge. In fact, I was like, I've made it. I was in Scanners too. And, talking about bad movies to review.
I love Scanners.
So Scanners 2 was in that with a lot more hair. It was a long hair ago. And they did a whole piece on the prosthetics, on some of the prosthetics. Cause you know, in the first movie, what did he say? What did God, I talked to the, it was the producer said to me, said, it was a French guy. That's right. It was like, in the first movie, they blow up the heads. In the second movie, we blow up the whole fucking body. And I was like, I'm in. And so we blew up bodies. But so there's some really fun kind of like old school, you know, prosthetic stuff that they did in that. And that was in Fangoria. And I was like, this is it. It's just up from now.
So
and then
so
there's like know, 2 years of unemployment.
You talked about this other movie you're in, Scanners 2. What about the Planet of the Apes remake? What was it like working with the monkey?
Oh my God. Like, it's the weirdest. It's one of those weird, remember like Postcards from the Edge where you're like, where she's on the edge and she's like, help, help. You know, and she's like, she just can't. She's like supposed to be hanging from a building and she just can't fake it. There was this split moment there where I was like, there was a grown man in a blue suit pretending to be a monkey on my chest. And that is my job. My son used to go to school and tell his friends that I work with monkeys. That was my job. Because at that age, that's all he heard me talking about was this. I freaking loved it. And I love Rupert. What is the guy's? Rupert? Is it Wyatt? I can't remember his second name now, but Rupert, the guy who directed it, was like an epiphany to me. This guy who had gone from this tiny little movie, The Escapists, which is like, you know, maybe $1 million. And the next movie he did was Rise of the Planet of the Apes. I mean, it was, it was incredible. And just how he, how he somehow translated from one to the other and what a machine he was dealing with. Like there was a division that did the stunts. There was a division that did the big spectacle stuff. Then he said, like, my job was to get the acting right. You know, so that was just an eye opener to me. And also the Zweta, like, or whatever they call themselves, running around. So I was like in the way all the time, you know, and John Lithgow. I mean, God, like it was just amazing, you know?
So I've got two more questions for you. And these are the hard hitting ones. The first one is, since Amazon has now purchased the rights to the Stargate universe, SG-1, and all that stuff.
What are we waiting for?
We need to know. Exactly. We need to know what you know about future Stargate projects. Are you involved? Have you heard any rumors?
I know nothing.
Oh, I don't know if I believe that.
No, seriously. Honestly, I'm not that good an actor. We're literally the last people to hear on this stuff. And I keep hearing it's going to get rebooted. And I'm always like, oh, great. And then it's like nothing ever happens. So I don't know how they can't. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I have this whole joke pitch for them. Joke pitch? I don't know. We'll see if they like it. I was like, you should just do Stargate Academy. You could bring in all these young, hot looking youngsters and then just have us old folks as the teachers. I could be the Snape of Stargate Academy. You know what I mean?
Like what they're doing with Top Gun Maverick or whatever.
Oh, is that what they're doing with that? Is that?
Yeah,
is that,
kind of. He's like,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, I just, there's so many, the problem is not ideas. The problem, I think, is rights. There's so many, like MGM, we're like selling, selling little bits of this and that all over the place. And I think it's just a legal mess trying to figure out who needs to be paid whenever you do this stuff. So I would love to see it happen. I'd love to see it happen.
Second question is, how quickly would you say yes if they offered you a new
project? I think I've already said yes. Okay. I've been asked so many times, I'm like, yes. Like, you mean continue playing McKay on screen as opposed to just doing it in my own private life all the time. So,
in the bathroom mirror. Exactly.
Yeah. You're still brilliant. You really are.
I'm a goddamn scientist. Yeah.
That's something McKay would actually do. Yeah.
Yeah. My son is always like, he's just brilliant on TV. That's all. It's just like, he's got no time.
You're talking about like rewiring your hydraulic chair to like mimic the... Yes. That's pretty intelligent. I couldn't do that.
That's called YouTube. That's what it is. It's just, you can find anything you want on YouTube. That was one of my things with the Tech Bandit stuff was like, it's not about teaching people anymore. It's just about inspiring them to go and look for it. Because once they find it, if there's something they're interested in, I mean, specifically when it applies to kids, I mean, and I consider myself a child as well. If you're interested, you'll go down that rabbit hole and you just need someone to push you in the right direction on that stuff. And then it just changes your life. I mean, if I didn't know you could make your own films, I mean, I was very lucky that I fell in with a bunch of people who were making movies and I wanted to be an actor. So it was like, this is perfect, you know? So now there's a whole YouTube for that.
Talking about your other projects, one of the shows I really liked and unfortunately it got canceled was Dark Matter. And, you were involved with Dark Matter and it was a show by Joseph Malozzi and Paul Mully, who did all the Stargate stuff. So I was just wondering, what were your experiences on that show?
It was lovely. It was a great, the first season, I think I shot the entire first season in like a day because it was all on, it was all like on the communicator type thing. I was like, it's the best job ever. Like, he's got paid for like five episodes. And I like, was like here for a day. You know, and just, he's just such a great character. I mean, he was just such a, he was like a completely unintelligent McKay. He was all Muppet and not a lot of brains. And it was just so much, it was just so much fun to play. But the scheduling was really tough on that. Like we got into, I was doing some directing stuff and we just went back and forth on stuff. So when it came to coming back, I didn't do it. And it was, and I feel bad because I didn't want to let them down, but they brought in someone else who'd played the assistant. I thought did a really good job with it, but I just couldn't, I couldn't do it. So unfortunately I couldn't do as much as I'd like. And, you know, they were just a great bunch. And that, oh my God, the set design and stuff is just gorgeous. Oh, yeah. On that.
I love the whole premise of the show. And I wish it had gone on longer.
How many years did they do? Did they end up doing?
They only did three seasons.
Only three. Yeah. It may have something to do with like tax credits up here or something. They probably run out after three seasons or something. The Canadians suck at supporting that stuff.
Okay, before we continue the conversation, let's hear a word from some sponsors.
Oh, we could fly.
This is your summer. That means Six Flags and the taste of an ice-cold Coca-Cola. We're talking thrilling coasters, delicious burgers, yes, real moments together, and this. Coke is summer refreshment when you need it most, so you can hop on another ride or race down a slide at the water park. Six Flags and Coca-Cola. Come make it yours. Visit sixflags.com/coke to save up to $20 on passes, plus daily tickets starting at $34.99.
So I have a question that comes from a good friend of mine who's freaking out right now that we're talking to you. It's rather hard-hitting also. How can he test to find out if he's an ancient or not?
You don't have to anymore. You just do the in vitro. You just get the get the gene therapy. You know, you don't need to know. Just get it done. That's what I did. You know, otherwise it's a life of disappointment. Just go get the jab. like most things in the world right now. I just advise you to go get a jab.
It's the ancient jab.
Yeah, just get the ancient jab, and then you'll be able to control the chair. And tell all your friends.
Ancient jab. Yeah. Got it.
Yeah. There was no way McKay could. It was so funny because I was like, I remember that first episode, that pilot episode. And I'm like, what do you mean he can't use the technology? I was like, I was whining about it. Like literally, I was like, come on, you can't do a whole show. I'm the guy. I can't use this stupid doctor. I think they just got sick of me complaining and went, just give him a freaking jab. And then he's done. Like,
You know, speaking of hard hitting questions, I wanted to ask you. So, you know, you were in, I think, two episodes of season 2, but, you know, both season 2 and 3 were shooting kind of concurrently. And you have a much bigger role in season 3. So is there anything you can tell us about season 3 of C, and what will your character be doing?
Yeah, give us
season?
That hot goss.
I let me just say that I had like the best time of my life. Like it literally is like the favorite thing I worked on. I mean, it is Tormata is everywhere, all over the place. And there are some, I think you will very much enjoy some of the odd, you know, combinations of people that he ends up with. So there's some really fun stuff.
Is Tormata the big bad of season 3?
I don't know about that, but in my mind, he is. in my mind, he's the big bad in season 2 as well. But, you know.
Nice.
Right what on. About Bautista, huh?
Oh
my God. That guy, like, he's like, you know, you think wrestler, but he's freaking acting on it. You know, at Dune and this, I mean, holy crap.
Yeah, and if he stands really still, you can't see him.
We had so many questions about his like giant scar on his head.
Oh yeah, they never covered that.
I thought it was a burn. I thought it was a burn.
Oh, okay, maybe it was. I don't know.
But Tropper said it was because Jason was beating up on him.
That's a pretty harsh beat.
I thought it was just Batista's head.
I wondered at first. I was like, ooh, he should not shave his head. But then I was like, oh, it's prosthetics. Yeah,
yeah. Where's that Drax prosthetic?
Exactly.
I got you this hat. Yeah.
Happy birthday.
Yeah, we call him Brainhead because he's got all those little squiggles up there.
Yeah, it's creepy because you do literally find yourself going like, is that his head? Like, you know. Whereas me, you're like, no, that guy is, yeah.
That just speaks to how good the VFX artists are with their prosthetics and stuff. They can sell anything these days.
Well, that and the VFX eyes, like the eyes, like yes. What they do to my eyes, these, like, it looks like a broken moon. Like it's just so, I'm like, it's like I said, between like the makeup, the wardrobe and the VFX, I don't really have to act. I just have to know my lines. That's it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Christian Camargo, when we were talking to him, he said luckily we don't have to wear those, any contacts. They just do it with CGI. And when we were talking to Chris Arruda, who's the post-production supervisor, you know, he was talking about all the time they spend like CGIing people's eyes in the show.
It's some poor intern's job to sit frame by frame and just smoke your eyes out.
It was like on Xena Princess Warrior. They used to farm out some of the wire removal to fans. Mm. Do you ever hear about this?
Really? I did not hear about that.
Yeah. They used to send out like a series of frames, and fans could go in and take out the wire for them. And so they would sort of like, they were like crowdfunding some of their visual effects stuff. Isn't that brilliant? I was like, I would do eyes, you know, I do all the eyes badly except mine. Like that would be like, mine would shine very bright and blue and like everyone else would be like kind of dull. And
Well, I'm going to have you convince Tropper to give you wolf eyes.
Yes.
That needs to happen. Even if it doesn't work, like just try it and you can just have just the wolf eyes, but you can't see because the operation didn't work.
I think Tropper's whole thing was like, they can't figure out how to jumpstart a car battery. But, they're doing optical surgery.
Whatever. Logic be damned. Come on.
I was like, Tormata could do it.
Yep. Yeah. I think, look, if he really sets his mind to it, I think he could, you know, you could be anything you want, Tropper. I want to have wolf eyes. Yeah. Oh my God. No, I heard him talking to you about that. And I was like, what the hell? Even just to be in a lab with a bunch of those heads, like it'd be like something out of like, you know, Frankenstein or was Frankenstein.
What a great set that would be, right? Just a bunch of body parts hanging around.
Oh my God. Yeah. Eyes.
The evil lab.
Yeah. An evil lab. You need an evil. Do you have an evil lab in season 3?
It's sort of a more of a, I'm more mobile. And I mean, I don't know. It's season 3.
We almost got
mainly mobile. Yeah. I'm surprisingly mobile. It's funny. It's one of the things I wish I did spend more time in the lab because I always love that stuff. Mm-hmm. But it's, there's so much politics and there's so much, you know, fighting to do that I think the lab would probably be a bit of a letdown for most people. So it's, well, and season 3 is just relentless. Like it's just not that I'm telling you that.
I like your character because the scenes that he is in, they're always like really just like good close-ups of you. And you're just always going, yes. Yes.
There's a lot more of that. Yeah.
You got the whole Mad Scientist thing going on.
Hard to choose that, like to figure out how to get that right, because we actually, that first scene where they're like Tormata and then I come in, like we shot that like 3 times. Like it was like, was it 3 times? 2 times? Maybe it's like, just felt like forever. But it was, they literally changed the makeup, they changed the hair, they changed, you know, that giant rodent on my back thing. You know, it was like, you know, I came in and I sent Tropper at one point, I sent him a picture of Uncle Fester and he was like, oh dude, he was like, no, there was so much debate back and forth as to what this guy should look like. So, but it was great for me because I got to be on set a lot without having to do a lot. Mm-hmm. So you got to sort of sit back and see how it worked and who everyone was and who I had to be nice to. and also just sort of kind of be a fan, like just like just geek out for a bit. It was great.
You couldn't tell him that it would make more sense to push the rock off a ledge instead of having Momoa pull it with a rope.
He wouldn't get to flex the same way. It's not that, you know.
Hey, you don't.
You
tell
give me wolf eyes and you can push the damn rock.
We complained about that, and I think Chris Arruda was like, "Yeah, that was Jason's idea," and I was like, "Oh shit!"
Yeah, and trust me, you don't want Jason mad at you.
No.
That feud goes on for years.
Yeah, that's it. That's it.
And then he cast you in his next show.
That's it.
Yeah. So, did you get to do any scenes with Flanagan in season 3?
I did. Awesome. Right, which was, it just, again, it's just lovely. I mean, he was joking again, because like, once again, I'm standing on a set listening to you fucking talk. He's like, nothing's changed. You know, I was like, no, actually, we look a lot older, Joe. Like a lot older, you know, so.
That's funny.
You know, it was lovely to see him. I think with any show, you make a certain connection, but for some reason, Stargate, I don't know what it was about it. I guess they were just good people. I absolutely just loved them. I just, yeah.
We can tell just from their interactions with us. Like, if they wanted to hate anybody, it would be us. And they absolutely don't. They interact with us all the time. And it's great.
Well, also, like, when we go back and rewatch Stargate Atlantis, like, you can just tell the chemistry between the cast. It seems like you all just got along and were friends and you enjoyed the job.
I think we shared a similar sense of humor. And I think we also had the benefit of, like, you know, we were on the shoulders of giants and, like, literally in the case of Chris Judge. But, you know, they knew, like, they'd gone through a lot of this stuff. I mean, like, Amanda Tapping at one point took me aside and said, "You ready for this?" And I was like, "Yeah, what do you, I know my lines. What do you mean?" Like, and it was like, no, like, it's a little more. And she was right. It was like, so you've got people who've been through this stuff before. I think that made it a lot easier. I can't imagine what it was like for them to go through it. But for us, it's like we were sort of, we were almost trained before we got into it. So it made a big difference, I think. And that sort of bonded us together really well as well. So.
Yeah. I showed Jude, the episode, The Runner, last night. And, and your whole thing about the sunscreen and like all that stuff. I was like, I wonder how much of that was ad-libbed versus what was written for you.
They don't ad-lib. They're not big on ad-lib. It's hard to ad-lib in sci-fi. It's like, and then the planet explodes. And like, oh, Jesus, what's he said? No, it's more about, I think they pick up on stuff and they definitely, I feel like McKay picked up a number of Hewlettisms, shall we say, as he went along, you know, snapping fingers and his love of food and also sunblock and stuff. But again, I'm just not that good an actor. I feel like I have to pull stuff from myself more than I can take on other people's stuff. So I feel like you sort of play up. Certainly for me, I just play up what you've got. Within reason, you know. And I think that. So I think there's a lot of stuff that. They start seeing you around. They start picking up on stuff as you talk to them on set, and you know they're like, "Oh, he's like this. We should add that." And then sometimes it's little jabs, like you're like, "Oh God, really?" You know. So it's fun.
All right, everybody, that is it for the interview with David Hewlett. Thank you so much, guys. It? Well, no, not quite. Oh. Because we're going to do our club members have a couple questions for David, and that's going to be for our club members only. So if you guys want to join the club, go to saltineerclub.com, and that's where the rest of this interview is going to take place. That's exclusive for our members.
All the good stuff.
All the really, really good stuff, guys. Saltineerclub.com. It's only $5 a month. Join in, help support the podcast, and the more support we get, the more awesome freaking interviews like this we can get too. So help us out.
Yeah, you think I come cheap? It ain't cheap.
Alex, real quick. David, is there any projects that you're working on that you'd like people to know about? Shout out your socials, all that stuff.
So the big thing coming up right now, which I'm kind of excited about. So I just did Nightmare Alley with Guillermo del Toro.
Oh, wow.
And so I did that. That's coming out. If you watch the trailer, that's my voice. I'm grilling him on that. So I was kind of excited about that. Baz is like, "Yeah, but you're not in it." I'm like, "Yeah, but it's my voice. Damn it, son." And then I'm working with Guillermo again and Vincenzo, who did Cube, in January on his Cabinet of Horrors thing. He's doing like a horror anthology for Netflix. And so I'm doing this one with rats. So it's me and rats.
That's up our alley 100%. Jude's freaking out right now.
And I'll give you one more thing. The Tech Bandits, I try to hop on at least once a week with a bunch of kids. And we just talk about fun tech stuff and I get to be a teenager again for a little while. And it's really fun. It really is fun. It keeps me young. I wish I kept my hair, but it keeps me, I feel young anyways. Yeah.
And you also have a Twitch channel, right? You live stream.
So yeah, my son got me into, we were trying to game together, but now I compared to him now, I just suck at gaming. So, so I got talked into doing all of my Tech Bandit stuff on like live, which is so weird because we were doing Zoom like during the pandemic and it's so sterile. And they were, you know, the great thing about Twitch is you've got the whole live chat as well. So I've got all these great like Stargate nerds on the right-hand side of my screen, a bunch of kids in my ear, and we can talk about just about anything. There's someone who knows something about it in the stream. So we'll end up talking about it, or whether it's robots or AI, or talking about biotech, where I think we're going to play with some jellyfish DNA. I want to get some jellyfish DNA and some bacteria and get them glowing and stuff. So that's my... That's the next. That's I think the next.
I'm gonna
big
have
project
to add him to my son's homeschool regimen.
Yeah. Well, actually, how old are the kids?
The oldest is 7.
Is seven. Oh, mm-hmm. Then I swear too much probably for them. But at some point, there's definitely some stuff. I can send you some stuff that, I mean, even just like some Minecraft stuff that we like playing with. And okay. Yeah, but definitely we'll talk. But I want to talk to you about homeschooling anyways, because I think that's a fantastic way to go.
My son loves Minecraft. He's obsessed with Minecraft right now.
I'm obsessed with Minecraft. It's brilliant.
Yeah, my kid's obsessed. I look at it more as like a virtual Legos for the modern age. Like when I grew up, I was playing with Lincoln Logs and Legos, and now they're just doing that in a computer.
Well, and they talk. They can actually talk doing it. So sorry, I'll let you wrap up your, you're trying to do a podcast. Okay. Sorry.
Vader, say sign off. Where can they find you on the social?
Oh, you can find me at MattVader74 on the Twitter, Google. No.
Google.
Blah, blah, blah. Yeah, just Google them.
You can find me.
AOL.
You can find me at MattVader74 on the Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube.
Right on. And Jude, where can they find you at?
You can check out my MySpace page. You can find me at I Am Jude Juju on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And check out our Facebook page, Salty Nerd Podcast on Facebook.
Right on. Matthew Kish?
Yeah, I have my Friendster profile up. It's you can find me at Matthew Kadish, Kadish on Twitter. KadishBooks.com takes you to my Amazon page. And if you go to saltylist.com, you can sign up for our newsletter. We offer people a free private RSS feed for podcasts that don't make it onto the main channel. It's just for our newsletter subscribers, so go check it out.
Right on. And I'm Alex, the Salty Nerd. You can catch me on our Discord app, saltynerddiscord.com. And don't forget, if you want the rest of this interview, where we have club members asking David Hewitt cool questions, go to saltynerdclub.com and help support us in our efforts to grow and do this full time and have awesome people like David on the podcast. So saltynerdclub.com. Thank you guys so much. Appreciate it. We'll catch you guys next time, and stay salty.
Stay salty.
We could fly.
This is your summer. That means Six Flags and the taste of an ice-cold Coca-Cola. We're talking thrilling coasters, delicious burgers, yes, real moments together, and this. Coke is summer refreshment when you need it most, so you can hop on another ride or race down a slide at the water park. Six Flags and Coca-Cola. Come make it yours. Visit sixflags.com/coke to save up to $20 on passes, plus daily tickets starting at $34.99.